Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source. Provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting. The Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. Intelligent Business Ideas to Go is sponsored by CCH, a Wolters Kluwer business.
This is Intelligent Business Ideas to Go, Episode 10, the CCH Accounting Trends Survey.
Hi, Greg LaFollette for Intersection Live. We're recording Intelligent Business Ideas to Go, Episode 10, and my guest today is Mike Sabatis, the president of CCH. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hi, Greg. How are you today?
Great, great. Thanks so very much for taking time out. I know you're probably between trying to do all of your year-end stuff with CCH and do your Christmas shopping and your traveling and everything. You got plenty to do besides this, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the time, too, and I'll get to the Christmas shopping eventually.
Right. I understand that. So, Mike, we've got an interesting topic today, and I've been watching some of the things and actually admiring some of the things that you guys over at CCH do in terms of trying to better understand the profession. I've watched that for a while. You invest a fair amount of time and I assume money also in trying to study the profession that you serve. Tell me a little bit about why you do that.
Well, yeah, Greg, I think it goes back to one key element. If you look at the fundamental part of CCH, and I know when I've taken over the group, we've talked a lot about being customer-focused. And when we talk about being customer-focused, it's more than just a term. Certainly, everything we build and everything we consider building and talk about has to have customer in mind first, because if a customer can't use it, can't benefit from it, doesn't see a value in it, then really that's what makes CCH exist. We've got to provide that value to customers. So when we look at the amount of time that we spend with that, there's no way we can just design things and hope customers will use it. We have to do it really at the opposite way and think in terms of how they're working. You know, and there's a lot of talk in the industry about workflow, not as a product or a service, but really how do people get their work done? And that's really where this whole thing starts. We want to understand all the steps you take to produce the end product. Now, that could be from a CPA firm, or it could be from a CPA working in a corporate environment, and understanding what deliverables they have to provide to their client or their constituency, whoever they may be. It could be a board of directors. It could be a taxpayer. It could be a corporation who needed an audit done or something of that nature.
Sure.
So, by watching how they work, by understanding the steps they take, not only using our product, but using anything, any work product they have to develop, then we know where to spend our time and efforts in meeting their demands and workflow. And so we may look at things like, how they get a tax return done is one example, but, you know, they still have to deliver an electronic file to the IRS. They still have to deliver a taxpayer package.
Sure.
They may have to pay the bills for that particular taxpayer. They have to do estimates, planning. And so there's a number of steps in the workflow. So we want to see where does it all fit, what gaps are there in solutions they may or may not have, and areas that they're taking extra steps in. And so that's why we spend all this time studying the profession. And we want to look at it beyond our customer base. We look at it for everybody who is in the profession. So when we do things like surveys, we don't only just survey our customers, and when we meet with people, we have a formal process called contextual design.
Right.
You know, we meet with people who use all types of products. So
sure,
we get
because you want to talk to the people who haven't chosen your product yet also.
Right. We don't look at it as a sales process, if you will. We look
sure.
at it as a data gathering
right.
and understanding the profession process, which I think is really important in the end.
Now, I know, Mike, last time I ran into you, and we visited a little bit, and you told me that you had just spent a half a day or better meeting with a group of partners in a firm where you know, you just went out as president of CCH and sat and met with a group of partners and kind of listened to their planning process. How often do you do that personally?
I get out and see customers probably four or five times a month at different venues. They're not. I do a lot of one-on-one work with customers.
Sure.
But obviously, I see them at industry events as well. Just recently, I was at the Information Technology Alliance.
Right.
And that's really a group of IT partners.
Right.
And what I found there, you know, again, they're another constituency if you look at it. What do IT partners and the people who drive IT and CPA firms, what do they need to manage their business? When you look at their needs, they might be quite a bit different than, say, what an auditor may need or what a tax accountant may need. They've got to support those people. They've got to have products that install easily, that integrate easily. So you'll learn a lot by sitting down with these different groups that then I can bring back and talk to my development staff or my product management staff, my support staff, and we come up with some very, very good detailed findings. And from my seat, I think it's important to be engaged in the business,
right,
not just from the financial standpoint and making sure the top line revenue there and earnings are there, but understanding what customers want and how our products work and how we're perceived in the market. So that's why I spend the time with them.
So, and you have I know you have formal product managers and segment managers, and you do customer focus groups and all sorts of different ways. But the one that kind of caught my eye just recently was this accounting trends survey. This is a particular survey, and you actually went out and hired somebody to do this, kind of and partnered with somebody to do it. Tell me about the methodology on this.
Well, let me take a step back too to talk a little bit about segment and product management.
Okay, sure. I'm sorry.
And that'll set the stage, I think, right for why we went out and did some surveys. First off, we look at the profession in a multidimensional way. From a segment manager standpoint, they're chartered with looking at a particular market segment. Could be a large CPA firm, could be a small CPA firm or midsize, could be a corporation. We would look at CPA firms and corporations and law firms as separate segments. And so they're taking a broad look at the segment area and looking and understanding the trends of that particular area. We look at product managers as another part of that matrix. They have a deep view of their particular product in a particular segment. So somebody building engagement today would understand how a CPA firm would use the engagement product to do audits, compilations, and reviews.
Right,
and they
right.
would look within the corporate segment to understand how a corporation may use it for similar type of usage, just to get the trial balance information from the multiple consolidated companies.
Right.
So that's a good space to start the foundation. When we look outside, we partnered with Harris Interactive, and we have for the last couple of years, to do independent surveys of the profession. And in those surveys, we want to understand the trends of that profession a little better so that our segment teams and product management teams, in addition to our product development teams, get a better view of what's important to that particular CPA. So this past case, we went out and we did a little look at what's transitioning to the next line of success in your business and really the next generation. And we used Harris Interactive. They went out and surveyed independently a little over 300 CPA firms of all sizes and shapes on a series of questions that really were looking at what's important to them in the very near term, looking forward.
So this is like the next, like, 2 or 3 years?
Yes. I mean, it's actually in the next 12 months, 36 months.
Right.
You know, and based on that, if you look, again, how we build our business plans, we try to triangulate between a number of different you know, data sets with as much empirical evidence as we can to support that. So not only what we do when we go out and see customers, but also what we hear from these surveys and these other formal methods of data gathering.
You know, as I look at the profession, and I, you know, have privy to an awful lot of data that I get to see. I mean, it to me, it's I mean, it is a great time to be in public accounting. And it seems like everything is pointing up. All of the right things are happening. We've had two or three years of double-digit growth everywhere. And, you know, while there's some concern, I think, about the economy right now, it doesn't seem to be real hard. I mean, people need accounting services when things are bad as well as when they're good. So for our profession, we seem to be doing awfully well. And as I looked through the trend survey, I saw that a lot, but there are some areas of concern, because there's always going to be something that's going to keep us awake at night. What are some of the things that you found that keep us awake at night?
Well, I think you're spot on with the profession as far as there's a great opportunity being an accountant today, whether you're coming out of school and you're looking for a new job and this is a profession you've chosen. Whether you're nearing retirement age and you want to work a few extra years, there are absolutely opportunities for skilled people in this space, whether it be in a CPA firm or corporate America. I think with the intense regulation that continues to come out, it puts corporations at risk. There's a much higher degree of focus on risk within companies. And that risk could be anything from IT risk to financial risk to earnings risk, and to just to ensure that all of the reporting is accurate. And so I think that's what's part of what's driving that need. Certainly with the presidential election and the change we're about to embark on, there'll be new regulations that come out. And I think that, again, gives us an opportunity to drive deeper in this profession.
Uh-huh.
I know just from running this business that we have a higher degree of need for CPAs in the business as well. I mean, our finance teams continue to grow because of that added regulation. And then when you look at an international company like ours, is we've got to deal with IFRS, which is coming our way as well. And so I think you're going to see that happening in large companies and small companies, which creates demand for the CPAs.
Right, and that's, of course, IFRS is going to cause problems or opportunities, I guess, for everybody in the U.S. too, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I know one of the things that I saw every firm list as their area of concern is growth.
Mm-hmm.
We are growing very well, but everybody wants to grow more.
Right, and I think what I saw interesting in this trend analysis is just a year or so ago, the number one item was staffing, retaining and keeping talent,
right,
and acquiring talent. And what I found interesting this year is that what's immediate on their minds is growth, because I think they have enjoyed some growth over the last few years as CPA firms. And now, from an economic standpoint, there are some indicators and challenges out there for growth. And I think it's on the top of the business person's mind now. So if I'm a CPA firm, I've got to find ways to continue to grow. And while this economy is changing and certainly the regulations are changing, I think you're going to start to see them look at more specialized services. And I think they need to understand their customers better.
Right.
And so just like I mentioned earlier in this conversation, knowing your customers, I think it's important for CCH. I think it's equally important for these CPAs to know where they can leverage their best talents into the right customer basis so they can drive growth in the business. And then that also goes into acquiring the talent necessary to manage that business. So I think you'll see some firms retrenching and changing the way they do business in order to stimulate that growth.
A lot of firms talk about being concerned about keeping up with technology, and I don't know, Mike, whether you at CCH help them keep up with technology or challenge them to keep up with technology, but it's probably both. And they're concerned about productivity, and I see those two pretty closely related. I mean, if it weren't for the technology that you and your competitors have provided, we wouldn't, as a profession, be able to be as productive as we have become.
Right. When I think of technology, and actually I mentioned this at the user conference and I got some good feedback from it, I look at us as technology is not the driver, you know, and I'm working with a technology company, right? But I don't necessarily look at that as the big driver. I think we're in the people optimization business.
Yep.
And technology in that vernacular then really becomes a enabler. So when I go back to understanding how customers work and I see how they work and I'm looking at how do we optimize them, technology is certainly the thing that we will use today to help optimize that. But we're really looking at their workflow process. And you made an interesting comment. You know, I don't know if we're driving it or helping these clients do more with technology, or we're causing more need for technology. The one thing we do know is that nobody's going to stop on the technology platform. There's not a day goes by that you're not hearing some new release, either from the hardware vendors or the software vendors. I mean, heck, if you just look at the cell phone vendors alone, there's something new coming out every day.
Right.
And I think at the pace that it's coming out, what we have to do as a company is understand the technologies and how they apply to your daily workflow, and then help you manage that transition. And, you know, some of the trends that we're seeing is software as a service is becoming more acceptable in the marketplace.
Right. And actually desirable. It's aspirational now.
Absolutely. So when we look to build product and service, you know, we want to make sure that we're addressing that need for those IT staffers, but also for the people who have to use the product day in and day out.
Right.
You know, right now we've got 7 products that are in that software as a service mode. And so we feel we've got a pretty good footprint there. We certainly understand it. We're investing in our data center and our infrastructure at a higher rate than we've ever invested. And we look at that as, you know, another methodology to put product and service out. Will it all be there this year? I don't think everybody's going to transition to software as a service, but I think you're going to start to see more and more of it at a faster pace.
Right. Well, that's actually one of the what I would call the learnings that you pulled out of this, or that I saw as I was going through. Let's kind of do, Mike, like a 30,000 foot view of those things. I mean, I kind of went through and I picked out specialization, paperless, knowledge management, demographics, in remote access. Now, those are all large, and there's a lot of other stuff in here too besides those. But are those 5 fair things to kind of talk about a little bit?
Absolutely.
Okay.
They're all important.
Okay. So talk to me about specialization. You know, and specialization and credentialing are near and dear to my heart, and I absolutely believe this, and I've seen it coming and developing, and you found some really interesting things about that. What did you see?
Well, I think, you know, let's look at some of the most successful companies and people. One of the greatest assets they have is focus and understanding what they do very, very well. So if you look at the CPA industry, certainly there's some broad services like tax and audit, but I think when you look at specialization, the people that we see growing right now have focused people within their organization, within their firm, looking at particular niche areas, whether it be you know, medical and hospital areas and healthcare, whether it be planning, whether it be selected corporations in certain vertical markets, could be telecommunications and things of that nature. What we are starting to see is they become experts in a particular area, and then that in turn becomes their strength, and they start to build out stronger and stronger customer bases. The other thing is that they become they start in a much broader sense of the geography that they cover, because they can cover a lot more ground by specializing in a certain area. You know, take auto dealerships. Well, they're everywhere. You don't have to. You're not really constrained by the geography that you happen to set up your office in. You could do auto dealerships all over the
sure.
country, all over the world, for that matter.
That may not be the perfect example to use today, but I understand your metaphor.
They'll you know what? They'll still be selling cars no matter how many of them are left.
You're exactly right. We're all going to need to buy something.
Yeah.
So I noticed that 2/3 of the firms said that their specialized services we're growing and they're drilling deeper into specializations and planning to expand. That's pretty strong. That's a lot of people.
I think it's a huge trend, you know, and then we've always focused on niche services, if you will, as an area. What you're hearing now, though, is that people in their business planning are really starting to look at that as their growth engine. So they're realizing that by focusing in particular areas, they can leverage that. They can do a better job. I think they can create higher value for their clients, which in turn drives growth.
One of the platforms that that a lot of the other thing, a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about kind of rest on becomes paperless. And I heard about paperless. The first time I heard about paperless was in 1974 when I first came into the profession. People were talking about paperless. And, you know, we've been talking about it ever since. But the last couple of years, things have really happened. And it appears that, you know, that we've now reached well into critical mass. And this is pretty meaningful. You've done a lot of work here and have a lot of information. Share with me, Mike. You had a great illustration at your users conference when you did your keynote, and you talked about what's happened with photography. Share that with our listeners, would you?
Oh, sure. I mean, if you think back in terms of years ago, digital photography has been here for a while, and Kodak was at the forefront of delivering that. In fact, they put a component part on a camera that was the first digital product. Now, they determined that as a film company that maybe digital wasn't necessarily in it for them. While they could create the technology to do it, they still looked at themselves as a film company. You know, what's changed dramatically is companies like Fuji and Canon now take what costs in the range of $13,000 for somebody to buy back in the 90s to down to under $100. And from a digital level, you know, there's really a couple different people out there. You know, you've got your digital natives and your digital immigrants.
Right.
And if you think of it in terms of the digital native, that's a person who's grown up and experienced nothing but digital. They
right.
understand it. It's in their, you know, their day-to-day activities. And they never thought of paper in their process. When you look at a digital immigrant, there's somebody who's kind of come along. They may have started in that paper process. And they still think in terms of that paper process every time they take a picture.
Right.
So, you know, a good example is a digital native will just take a picture. The digital immigrant will take a digital picture, and they actually think of it in those terms.
Right. I just bought a new digital camera.
Yeah. And when really you just bought a camera.
Exactly.
And so I find that interesting. And as you apply that to the profession – and you think of where we were, you know, we still use paper at different points in time, and it still has some impact in the organization and how you process. But what you're seeing come into the profession now are more and more digital natives who understand the processes around it, and they don't even think in terms of paper. They think in terms of whether it be email or portals. Or other ways to distribute information. You know, they're the ones who walk in just with a PC. They take all their notes on a PC. They send you a file with all their information. You want to see a picture? They'll turn their PC to you because they've got every picture imaginable on there. And that's it. They don't have a pencil. They don't have anything else with them. They don't have a calculator. They just walk in with their PC. And that's what we're starting to see in corporate America. I can tell you I see that at CCH every day. I try to work without paper myself. But we're seeing that in the profession as well. And so that change is remarkable. You know, the other thing we're starting to see is scanning technologies have come so far. So
right.
as even if you do receive paper, you know, we look at it, you know, close to 78% of the firms we surveyed use scanning technology right now. And, you know, another 18% will be there in the next couple of years. So we're looking at that saying, paper is starting to take the way, it's really starting to go away, and it's really becoming digital everything with PDF files and
right.
and how you manage that.
One of the interesting things that that you said, Mike, in your keynote was you questioned the audience and said to them, how many of you print every single photo that you take with your digital camera? And, of course, No one raised their hand. And you then said, how many of you print every single work paper that you create on your computer? And I saw a whole bunch of people kind of wondering whether or not they should raise their hand.
There are a few people, you know, I have the purview of the other side of that where I can see their faces.
Right.
And I've had a few people smile about that, Greg, and it was pretty interesting. And you know who you are out there. You know, and we work with those people every day. There's still a few of them who, you know, honestly, I know some people who still print out their emails.
Right.
And I find that incredible that you would do that. But the reality is it's changing.
Right.
And I think people need to, one, recognize it, that it is changing. I think companies like CCH have to be at the forefront of creating workflows that support that paperless and that digital technology that's out there.
Right.
Because we want to make it easy for that end user. If you can't get the information and you feel you have to print it out, I think it's beyond just, this is how I've done it. There's a different problem if you feel you have to print everything out. We haven't effectively delivered a product or service to you. And that's really what our focus is. We say every product we develop, one of the first questions that either I ask our product managers or our product developers is, how does this support our paperless technologies? And if it doesn't help support the paperless technologies, then we take a good, hard, strong look at it.
Right. You know, one of the interesting things is I look down some of the findings in the paperless world is the number of firms moving to portals, to publishing tax returns to portals or using portals and extranets and things like that. And you think back, you talked about legislation and things. Just think of what 7216 does for firms thinking about adopting portals.
No, it really changes a lot. And with the data that's available today, with all your scanned images, your tax returns as an example, you know, you've got information on individual taxpayers, that security is critical. We've done all the work. You know, we've actually created a product called iMask that actually takes out all the Social Security information that are on scanned images and also on the tax return,
right,
so that you can share data without the without breaking the regulation there. Additionally, if you look at a lot of these companies, I think 40% of the firms that we surveyed are now part of a regional or national or international alliance. And part of 7216 talks about how you cannot have offshore resources even review data that has Social Security numbers in it.
Right.
So we have to be able to support those firms. You know, what's their workflow and what's their challenge? They may have an offshore resource. You know, could be in Europe, could be in the Asia Pacific region, because they've got international needs that have to meet the demands of the U.S. laws.
Exactly.
So we've worked very hard to ensure that we can meet those needs. And again, we have some large, extremely large, largest in the world global customers who have multiple resources across the globe who have to have access to tax data so they can get their jobs done. And it's not just a low-cost option. It's really
exactly
a collaboration that is critical there.
So, Mike, a couple of the other the interesting areas are knowledge management and demographics. And of course, I think the demographics is in some way driving the desire and the need for knowledge management, as is paperless. You know, we have document management, and kind of the next logical step is knowledge management, and then you look down the hall and you see all the old guys like me saying, you guys have been talking about the statistics on how many of us are going to leave the profession with all of this knowledge, perhaps all this knowledge in our heads. And so you're working real hard trying to figure out how to bridge that gap. Tell me about knowledge management.
Well, I think, you know, knowledge management's not necessarily new. You've always had the guru in your office who understands a particular niche area, the go-to person. And, I think as you talk about the baby boomers retiring, we may surprise ourselves. There may be a few more baby boomers working for quite a while longer based on what's happening with our 401ks out there.
Yeah, my 201k isn't doing nearly as well.
But there's actually a good benefit to that, and the question we have to ask ourselves is how do we leverage that knowledge and how do we leverage that that employee who may choose to take a little bit of an alternative career path. They may have been a partner in a firm before, and they don't want the responsibilities of the partner or the partnership any longer, but they still want to contribute to the profession, to the firm, to the clients. And so how do we leverage that knowledge? Well, we need to look at the demographic side of it and say, while they may be retiring or taking on a different role, we still want to be able to utilize their skills. Then we look at the budding workforce that we have, the kids that are coming out of college, and how do we manage that? And knowledge management is what's critical. So when we take somebody who's been in a profession for 20, 30, 40 years, there's a wealth of knowledge out there that we should be able to leverage. And as you're coming into the profession, what they train in their undergrad and grad degrees now is so much more advanced than it was in prior years. You're getting some very, very smart people coming out of school who also can spread their knowledge. And it's not just knowledge in a particular law or regulation, but it's knowledge in how to work. It's knowledge in process management and efficiencies there. And so knowledge management within a firm has to be a critical skill if you're going to be competitive and you expect to grow going forward. And, again, when I look at what CCH is doing in this area, we've spent a lot of time internally. To give you a feel for it, I've got probably 700 to 750 employees who work remotely. So they don't report to an office. And I've got another 1,400 or so who report to offices. So how do I make the experience the same whether you're new to the company or old to the company, whether you work in a corporate office or you don't? And how you interact. I need to be able to get data to all of them,
right,
and share that. And I think that's very true in the profession as well, is how do you ensure that you get the right data to the right person at the right time? And this goes through knowledge management. And they need to be self-sufficient in those areas. And the tools and technologies that enable that, I think you have to look to companies like CCH to help. And if you look at something like our good example of knowledge management in action, is our, a couple of our information tools, Accounting Research Manager and the Tax Research Network. You know, we've got about 80 terabytes of information. 80 terabytes, that's a ton of information.
Right.
That we logically put out that anybody can get to who subscribes, that really helps you manage knowledge within the profession. And then there's tools within this. You know, you'll see a new product come out this year called IntelliConnect, which really combines all those resources in a very easy-to-use methodology, very logical. And again, whether you're new to the profession or you've been in the profession for decades, it's a valuable tool that you'll be able to use to share more and more knowledge. The other thing you'll see this year, we'll put our first real prototype of a true knowledge management system to a couple select sponsors, mm-hmm, within the profession so they can really start to understand not only the process of knowledge management, but the technologies around it that support it.
There's some interesting things in when you ask these different firms how they looked at knowledge management, what kinds of tools they looked at, and you see that better than half of them said they're either using or planning to use things like blogs and wikis and podcasts, and we have well over 150,000 listeners to Intersection Live podcasts, which I would never have guessed even a couple of years ago. But as young people come in and they're used to using those kinds of tools, and there's a lot of stuff going on in the social networking stuff. It seemed to me that as I listened to your keynote, Mike, you talked a little bit about how CCH sees the knowledge management social networking kind of complementing one another.
Oh, absolutely. When you look at how we work today, good example, we're doing it today. We're doing a podcast. The meeting I had just before we started this podcast, the person I talked to was telling me about how they're downloading some information so that they can listen to it on the plane on the way home. So they're using their iPod as a knowledge management device because they have the ability to.
Right.
You know, Greg, and when we were talking at the user conference, I mentioned that all the generations leading up to today have always wanted to be more connected. They always wanted more information at their fingertips. And I think the neat thing about the generation we're in today is that we have the ability to be connected. We really do get a chance to use all these tools. And again, when you go back to knowledge management, it is a series of wikis and podcasts and blogs, informal information as well.
Well,
and it's part of their culture today.
Yeah, and there's value to that sort of thing. I mean, and thank you for accepting my friend request on Facebook. And as a result of that, I knew that you were at ITA because I saw it on your status report.
Yep.
And so, you know, we didn't have to talk. I just saw it very short, you know, little things there. But things like that help people be connected, you know, just using technology. That's kind of an odd one in there. Talk to me a little bit about the demographics things. You had Peter Sheehan, who was a huge hit there and a great speaker. He talked a little bit about some of the Gen Y stuff. And that's part of the demographics, but certainly not all of it.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, we had Peter, who is in the under 30 crowd, talking to a group of executives about how they run their business and how to understand Gen Y and what their needs are. So, you know, it's not too often that you would get somebody of that young age, if you will, to be an expert in an area. But what he did bring to light is the fact that we have to recognize that people are different today. They're driven in the same ways we were driven when we were 20 or, you know, 22 or 25 or 30 years old. But there's different technologies out there. There's different life experiences. And we have to understand them a little bit better if we really want to leverage them in the workforce today. And so rather than trying to change them to the ways that we think are best, we need to recognize what their strengths are and leverage that. And I think that's true. It's beyond just the CPA profession. It's really in any business anywhere. You've got to continually make sure you understand what your workforce is about. And so I think that demographic opportunity of pulling in to the profession and making it interesting for people, we have to look at what do we bring to the table for them. And it's not just a matter of them wanting to know that there's something at the table to deliver, but when they watch how we work, they want to make sure that they have all the modern tools, the easiest way to get something done, the most effective and efficient way. They're not afraid of working. I look at these generations coming up and the different demographics. I think they're willing to work as hard as any generation that we've ever had. But they don't want to waste their time, and they want to ensure that they do it the most effective and productive way. And that's what I think we owe these new generations coming up, are tools, processes, and really the cultural belief that we can do things more effectively and more efficiently. And again, that's where, you know, a company like mine, CCH, comes in and says, we have to understand not only the existing workforce, but the emerging workforce as well.
One of the things that Peter talked about, Mike, that I found particularly interesting was the idea that the Gen Ys, the younger generation, the under 30s, are willing to work hard. They're not willing to work dumb. And frankly, that's the way that we worked when I started in the profession, you know, 80-hour weeks during tax season. And now the Gen Ys come in and they look at us and our work roles in the profession and they say, I'm not working 80 hours a week. End of tape. And so they don't. And people in my generation look at them and say, that's right. Working 80 hours a week is dumb. I did it before, but I'm not going to do it anymore. So now we have no one willing to work 80 hours a week. And it turns around and we look back to technology to help us be more productive, to get all of the things done. And, you know, so we've got all of these things, they all kind of feed into one another.
Absolutely. And again, I think that people are willing to work the time necessary as long as they feel that they're using productive processes and productive tools.
Sure.
If the tool or the process is broken and that's causing you to work more hours, I don't think it's age specific at all.
Right,
None of us want to work in an environment where we're not supported or to work extra hours because of a flaw or a flaw in the process.
Exactly.
And I really think you do have to look at it multidimensional here. It's the processes as well. You know, when we talk to customers about going paperless, I can supply the tool that supports paperless. But if your culture or process doesn't support it, the tool doesn't really matter.
Right.
And so we spend a lot of time when we do our implementation engagements to understand their culture today, to understand what they're trying to accomplish, to give them some guidance on best practices we've seen and firms who have made the switch to paperless as example, and then to try to help them make that transformation. And the success we see, you know, in some of the most successful firms in the country who have made that transition and that transformation, you know, they've done it at the grassroots level. And it starts from the moment a piece of paper comes in the door to the last time it could potentially leave or some communication leaves. They've really changed their culture to get there. And I think what they've found is they attract better talent. They keep better talent. They're more productive. They see their firms grow above what the market's growing, and they get into deeper niches because they have more information about it. So it really does support a lot of the things we hear in the trend.
Well, and a lot of the, you know, all of these things kind of then point to the last thing that we talked about that was particularly meaningful, I think, in here, Mike, was the idea of the technology. I call it remote access, but it's actually bigger than remote access, just wanting all of the appropriate tools. And when you look at where the firms are making major investments, and investments not only in money, but in, as you said, changing culture, and that's a big investment too, the time and effort to do that. Lots of things. What kinds of things did you see firms signing up to do?
Well, and I think this is an exciting part of where our profession is today, and this is what I really like about it as I look at just the whole access of to technology. What I see a lot of firms doing is, you know, they work while they're at clients' offices. They work at home. They work on the road. You know, in fact, today, you know, my BlackBerry, I can look at Excel files and edit them on the fly. I can edit Word files. I can even edit PowerPoint files right off my BlackBerry today.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see those technologies come out and then you apply that to how the profession is working, if you want to get the most out of your people, you need to provide them the freedom to work when they're going to be most effective. And it doesn't always mean in an office. I look at commutes here. I'm in California today, and I have people who have, you know, two-hour commutes to work. That's 4 hours of potentially unproductive time. So if I can offer some type of flexible hours to them, one, their commute goes down, and two, if I let them enable them to work remotely, I get more work from them. They become more productive, and it really helps them meet the demands of their personal life. You know, we talked a lot about in the last couple of years about work-life balance.
Right.
And that wasn't necessarily doing less work, but it was being more effective in getting the work done that you had to do and feeling that you're making a difference. And so, you know, what we see is, you know, people not only use email remotely, but they use all of our applications remotely.
You know, Mike, you and I did a podcast at your users conference with several of the 40 under 40 class that were CCH employees and attendees. And one of the things that these young people pointed out was how much they valued those tools. And they would say, I don't mind working at all at my kid's soccer game. When my phone buzzes, I look at it, I answer an email, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But other people my age, oftentimes look at those tools and say, you know, I feel like I'm tied down and I don't want to be accessible that much. It's a mind shift. It's a different way of thinking about it. That was kind of enlightening for me.
Well, Greg, I think it's a personal choice, too. You know, when people don't want to be at work or connected, that's your choice. Just because you have a BlackBerry or a, an iPhone or a tool that will enable you to be connected doesn't necessarily require you to be connected.
Right. Well, my model of BlackBerry, Mike, has an off button. I don't know if yours does.
Yeah, it still has an off button, and it works.
Right.
But I will tell you this, being able to answer a question very quickly, whether it be through email and my BlackBerry or instant messaging or text messaging, you know, certainly you have to look at some of the regulations around information and information management, but being able to answer a question on demand quickly, I think provides so much liberation for the workers around you because they can get their jobs done faster. And really the time it takes you to respond to some of these things are seconds.
Right.
Which, what does that do for your, what does that do for your productivity? It absolutely accelerates it. And again, going back to how we started this conversation, companies are really concerned and looking about how do they grow and how do they grow faster.
Right.
Speed is one of the most important parts to growth. And the faster you can react to your clients' needs or to your workers' needs, it'll enable you to grow faster.
And,
so I think it's definitely a tool.
Exactly, and enables them to, you know, that staff person, when you answer that email immediately, has no downtime. You know, they're chugging along, and you go back to the soccer game.
Right, absolutely.
Beautiful, beautiful solutions. Mike, the survey is still up on your site, I believe, at cchgroup.com/trends. So people can go there and pull down a copy of the report. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And we've had thousands of customers pull it down already, and I've had a number of requests, and actually in some of my visits to customers, we've actually had this similar conversation we're having today, Greg, where we actually have looked at the process. They've used it at partner meetings, company retreats. I really think there's some great valuable information within the context of this and things that you can use to help better manage your practice. So absolutely take a look at it.
Good. Well, I'm glad it is. I'm looking down our list here. We've got about a dozen guests here listening to us record live, and several of them had their electronic hands up saying they had a question. And as soon as you answered that question, all the hands went down. So that was obviously the question that all of our guests had is, where can I get a copy of the thing that Mike Sabatis has been talking about? And it's a very valuable report and very interesting, and I, as a practitioner, Mike, I thank you and CCH for your investment of time and effort to put that out and present it to the profession. It's valuable information.
That's great. We'll continue to do that. This has become a formal process for us, so we're going to continue to do these surveys and dig deeper each year. So hopefully we can provide that information. And certainly, you know, if anyone's interested in talking with one of our employees, we're all pretty well versed in the details here. We'll be more than happy to meet with you and talk in more detail.
Well, Mike, we've used up our allotted time. I want to be respectful of your time and all of our listeners' time. I wish you safe travels and a great Christmas, and we will see you immediately after the first of the year, I'm sure. We've got lots of things going on, so thank you again for all of your time.
Thank you, Greg, and my best wishes to everyone for a happy holiday this year.
Bye now.
Take care.
This has been Intelligent Business Ideas to Go, Episode 10, the CCH Accounting Trends Survey.
For more information about the CPA Technology Advisor's other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit www.cpatechadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106. Or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.